All right, hello everyone. Welcome back to The State of Startups. This is episode 26, titled Quantum Computing Breakthroughs, Updates on Neuralink, and More About Rome Research. All right, so just a little housekeeping. I finally finished my UX program from Springboard. This week, today, actually, was the official completion. So, really excited about that. I'm now kind of on the job hunt for UX kind of research jobs. And but the good news for you guys is I want to really now double down on this, and I want to try to get two podcasts in a week. Is my goal. It might just be once a week to start out, but now that I'll have a little bit more free time, I definitely want to up it. I want to try to get two a week would be nice. So you know, you'll be hearing more from me. And I'm also have been kind of in the back of my mind thinking about changing the podcast name again. I'm not quite sure. I think what I want to do is actually, but when I publish this episode, I think I want to have some episodes be called Paradigm Predictions. I wanted to maybe change the whole name of the podcast to Paradigm Predictions. Well, just because the state of startups I do like. However, there are many, many podcasts that have startups in the name. And I just want to kind of differentiate myself a little bit. I know I'm very unknown. I'm kind of a nobody person right now. And there's a lot of business investing podcasts that have to do with startups. And again, there's so many that have literally the word startups in the name that I think this is easily findable, like easily searchable. But I want to do something different. And I, like I said, I've said this before, I don't really want to always highlight startups that are already out there. Like, I think there's enough people doing that, like, you know, TechCrunch and Crunchbase. There're just a lot of people already writing about what's out there right now, what to pay attention to. And I know that's kind of the idea of this podcast, but I kind of like doing things that are more futuristic, like more sci-fi. And that's why the idea of paradigm predictions, it really interests me. And I kind of do this already. And in fact, I'm going to be doing it in this episode as well. Like I said, I get a lot of my source material from the YouTube channel Seeker. So if you've been listening, you know that, and the Venture Stories podcast. So, and I think what my unique take is, and what I like to do the most is, think about what's coming, like what's going to be big, like 10 years from now that people are starting today or thinking about today. And that's like paradigm shifting technologies, you know, stuff that is really big that will be like, you know, the iPhone moment. I know Eric Thornburg always says that, you know, what's going to be the iPhone moment of X. And what he does a really good, and that's why I quote him a lot, is that he talks a lot about, he tries to get the guests to make predictions about their industry or certain industries. And it came to my attention like that a lot of people don't like giving predictions. They don't like to be wrong, or they don't even like to, and I don't know why people are like that, because I think that to me, a lot of the times is the most fascinating thing about an episode is what do they think is going to be big 5 to 10 years from now, 20 years even. I don't know why people shy away from that. And honestly, I think that is more fascinating to the everyday person than listening to 40 minutes of your backstory. And that's what I don't want. You know, not only am I kind of an unknown person, I can't really get good guests for you guys, but to me, I don't want to really do that anyways. For now, I like just doing what I'm doing because I can talk about whatever. I don't have to interview a person, you know? I don't have to, you know, say I was interviewing Steve Case, for example, the AOL. Okay, we could spend 40 minutes talking about him going way back to how he started, you know, back in high school, college, and the whole, you know, the first 30, 35 minutes of the episode would just be not useful to you guys. And there's so many podcasts out there like that. And that's why in the description of my, of this podcast, I that's not what this is about. This is not a long interview dragged out. I don't want to hear, you know, you guys don't come to this and I don't want to make it like that. I don't want to have a huge long backstory about how you, you know, this person got started and he did this, then he did that, you know, that's not useful to anyone. So, so when I'm listening to podcasts, you know, the request for startups, the predictions of what's going to work, what's going to be big, those are the most exciting things to me. And I hope it is for you guys, because that's kind of like actionable things to think about. You know, the point of a podcast, I think, is to walk away from it and then go do your homework on, you know, what they were talking about. You know, synthetic biology. Oh, we predict that, you know, this startup is probably doing the most interesting things in synthetic biology, and probably in 5 years we're going to see a huge breakthrough in that. You know, this is an example. So if, you know, if a podcast was about that, then you guys could walk away, look up that startup, look who's in it, research more about it, and then, you know, be excited about that industry then, and try to, you know, figure out how you could contribute. So paradigm predictions, you know, I like the double P kind of word, you know, so I may switch the whole name to it, but I may just have like certain episodes be called paradigm prediction episode, because every now and then I might have an episode where I am just kind of highlighting startups from like Crunchbase or whatever. So for now, I'm going to keep the name The State of Startups, but just know that that's kind of the direction I want to go. And I think that's a very unique take that I'm not going to say I'm the only one doing that, but I want to have that differentiating factor where I'm making big bets, like big predictions. But without further ado, let's get into today's topic. So both of these are not really startups. Like, I mean, it's quantum computing in general. And so again, this is like a paradigm prediction technology that's really, you know, we all know that it's here, but like, let's talk about the, you know, current state of it and where it's going. So both of these videos came out of the Seeker YouTube channel. The first one I'll talk about came out today, actually. It's called How an Accident Sparked a Quantum Computing Breakthrough. So basically, there's a team of researchers at the University of South Wales in Sydney. And basically, what they did, I guess, you know, again, it was kind of an accident. They just kind of tried this experiment and it ended up kind of making a breakthrough here. So I'm not going to play any bit of it. They do a pretty good job at like recapping it in the description. So let me just read a little bit here. So as we know, quantum computers are much more difficult to make quite as small as their classical counterparts. But one dream for future quantum computers is a best of both worlds scenario where single atoms embedded in a silicon can be manipulated with magnetic fields, producing more compact chips with millions of qubits on them. So as of now, the researchers in Australia have stumbled across a way to control nuclear qubits with more manageable electric fields. So what I might do here Let me see if. So basically, with like, so using kind of these magnetic fields, they were able to make more qubits, I think millions of more on a silicon chip, I believe.
It can be used to affect single qubits precisely, meaning more can be packed into a smaller space on familiar silicon. Going back to our billiards analogy, it's now as though scientists have been handed a pool cue. So, to recap, a team of researchers in Australia decided that, just for fun, they would test how a magnetic field affected an atom. And because of some accidental breakage, some surprise shrinkage, and their choice of atom, they made a landmark discovery that could make quantum bits smaller, easier to make, and more powerful. Oh, and they solved a problem that hasn't been cracked since it was first
proposed. All right, so that's basically the recap. You know, again, I don't know how much I should be playing of this video. At least I know, you know, I'm giving them the credit. It's from the Seeker YouTube channel, and I will include the link of this video in the description. So I hope I don't get in trouble for it. I don't think so. I mean, as long as I'm giving them credit. But it's just, it's really hard to put in my word, you know, to translate it without playing some of it. And, you know, I just watched this video, so it's just hard to grasp. But I'll let you guys, it's only a 5-minute, 15-second video. So, yes. So, really awesome stuff. Let's get to the next one, which is from the same Seeker YouTube channel. It's titled, this one came out on April 29th, so it's still very recent. The future of quantum computing could live on a cryogenic chip. So this one's a little similar, but they've scaled it down to this cryogenic chip here. Let me read a little bit here. Today, quantum computers have less than 100 qubits, but in order to tackle problems we want answers to, we will need to scale up to million qubit systems. Okay, so that means we will need a more sustainable way to control the behavior of qubits. One solution, a cryogenic computer chip. So Intel just debuted a chip it's calling Horse Ridge, a technology that takes the electronics needed to control the qubits and puts them on a chip that's capable of functioning at about 4 Kelvin. So they can live inside a cryogenic chamber with the qubits. Yeah, so again, I will let you guys watch more of this. This one's a 5-minute, 37-second video. Really good. They do a really good job recapping. And the both of them will be in the description, so don't worry about that. I'll give you access to that. One of the things I want to just talk about, kind of unrelated, you know, they mention, so like, Intel's working on this, Google's working on this, Microsoft is, you have one startup out of Y Combinator, Rigetti Computing, quantum computing. So, and then in the US, you also, I'm sure, have teams, you know, in other countries. So what I think I want to see from like VR is, why don't all of these teams work together? Why isn't there like one company working on this? Since this stuff is so new and it's just like, don't we want as many connected minds as possible on this? You know, and this goes to like the COVID situation as well. If we want a vaccine to COVID, don't we want all the researchers working together so that it, you know, we can come to a solution faster? I mean, isn't that the point? Isn't that when innovation is at its best, at its strongest, is when just many, as many people possible collaborating at once? So, boy, a request for startup for me, you know, and this is maybe already kind of out there, but like, you know, I understand quantum computing, these if you watch these videos, this is, you know, quantum computing is kind of like where classical computing was at in like the 1950s and 60s, these huge, like refrigerator size computers. So I understand that these are pretty elaborate experiments. It's not just like, you know, this isn't like open source software. We're like, well, what we need is like GitHub for these kinds of experiments. You know, GitHub, anyone can access the code and share it and collaborate on it. Well, I feel like we kind of need that now with, you know, large scale experiments like this, and not just quantum computing, but like energy, alternative energy startups, you know, like the Tokamak energy nuclear fusion reactors and stuff like that. And, you know, supersonic airplane, supersonic jets and monorails and flying cars, all these like hard tech, large scale. Oh, you know, I understand that like it's hard to get everyone that's working on it in the same room, but that's where VR can come into play. VR, AR can come into play. So like all these research labs, I feel like should have cameras all set up, and that way people all over the world can like tune in. And the one research lab, like say Intel, will host a day where they have cameras all set up in their labs, and everyone in the world who wants to help out can, and Intel will live stream the day so that anyone can tune in and give their 2 cents in real time, give their feedback in real time, and through VR and AR can kind of collaborate all together. So I don't know. This is some kind of startup that maybe I won't like start myself. I think this is the killer app for VR. I really do. I don't think it's going to be gaming. I don't think it's going to be, because, you know, games are just stuff that a certain type of population will like. I mean, I don't know. There is Fortnite where it seems like everybody likes that. Call of Duty. But the killer app for VR and AR is going to be work collaboration. And boy, I just want to get this message out there. I want to, you know, Boost VC had their Tribe 14, and they, Adam Draper's really, you know, if you're listening to this, Adam, help me get into a VR startup. That's what he really wants right now. And I'm there. I think this could be huge. You know, I just don't know if like Intel or Microsoft, you know, I can't put words in their mouth. I don't know if they'd want something like this, you know, because what I hate about it is like at the end of the day, they don't want other labs, you know, knowing their secret. And it's like, you know, can't we just get past that though? I don't know what it's like. I mean, I'm not in it, so I don't know what it's like. But anyways, that's just my 2 cents. I hope to get that message out there somehow. Anyways. There, I want to talk about Rome Research again for a little bit. There's the Venture Stories Village Global podcast. He had Connor White Sullivan, who's the co-founder of Rome, on, and it was so good. It was fascinating. Rome Research, I think, is one of the hottest, it's not just a startup. This is like a movement to really push humanity in a more intelligent direction. It is so, I mean, it's going to be the next Wikipedia. It is going to be, I think, the next Google. It's just this, it's not just a note-taking app. It is like a global connected global brain. And I think eventually every idea, every piece of knowledge will be universal, will be shared. And there's going to be no more disagreements. The facts will all be laid out. I don't know. I just listen to the episode. I will share it in the description. It's really good. I think this is like the next Alan Kay. This is the next, like, it really is the one of the most important, I think, you know, startup out there that's, I feel like it's like the next language. It's building a new language, the printing press. Like it's on par, I think, with that. So I need to sign up for it. I need to start playing around with it. I know they closed it off for newcomers, so maybe by now they've opened it up. There's like a wait list now. I got to get into it. But yeah, sign up for it and play around with it, guys. Okay, we're at 20 minutes. Trying to think what else I wanted to talk about. I listened to one podcast with Kevin Kelly. I always like listening to him. I found out something that I didn't know about him, and one of the biggest things he's working on or paying attention to is the idea of a global government. And he thinks it's inevitable. That's, you know, the title of his book. And everyone thinks he's crazy for it. So I really appreciated his input on that. And, you know, looking into 2030, 2040, we're going to be a spacefaring civilization. I feel like it really is going to happen. And for that to be successful, I do think there's gonna have to be a global government cooperation where the best scientists, the best astronauts, you know, in the world are going to come together, and we're going to be one planet. We're going to be one world. We're going to represent planet Earth. And it's just inevitable that it should be that. You know, we are already at a point in 2020 where most countries, most developed countries, are all almost the same. Knowledge-wise, technologically-wise, you know, financially-wise, we're all pretty much on the same level. So let's act like it. You know, we could be making progress so much faster and better if we just all collaborated. It's so true, though, and I just want to live in a world where that is true. No more boundaries. No more. I don't care if you're Asian, Mexican, black, white. Let's all come together and share good ideas. What to make the world a better place. Let's get there, you know? So that was really cool about him. And I'm thinking a lot more about the future of governance. You know, I also Neuralink, I'm sure you guys all know Elon Musk was on Rogan's podcast again, and I listened to it and the whole thing. And yeah, it was really good again. He gave some kind of updates on Neuralink a little bit, and that was probably the best part of the episode. They talked about COVID a lot, which is fine. I understand. But as far as like good takeaways go, the Neuralink was probably, you know, I mean, because it's something less talked about. We don't talk about Neuralink a lot. And that's going to be this whole brain-computer interface. Look, I feel like it's going to be the next internet. It's right up there with quantum computing. The next frontier of the internet is our bodies, is our brains. I think it really is. We've got software down now. Now it's time to look to quantum physics, like the cosmos, and then it's now in our own bodies and our own consciousness. So these are the next frontier things, guys. So Neuralink, I don't know. It will be definitely, you know, more for like paraplegic, you know, stroke patients, epilepsy patients, which that's awesome. That's great. That's where it should start. But, you know, the higher level things, more far out, you know, Elon said it'll be equated to having more of yourself in the cloud. And like an extension of yourself always in the cloud. That's really quite amazing. You know, because they mentioned quite a few times that your phone already, your smartphone already is kind of makes us all a cyborg. You know, it is an extension of our brain. We already have that. So now the next phase, the next part is to implant it in our brains to be connected to the internet. Our brains will be connected to the internet. And just like we have data storage in the cloud, you know, not just on our physical devices, but we have the cloud now, You put more stuff in the cloud to be shared with others. So that's that is like physically kind of how we will be more connected. The global consciousness will all be connected in the cloud for collaboration, idea generation. So that's pretty fascinating. I cannot wait to see that day. You know, and he says within like 2029-ish, 28, we will start to see that within about 9 years, he was saying. So that's awesome. I cannot wait. It's just truly fascinating stuff, guys. All right, I'm going to wrap it up there. We're about 26 minutes in here almost. I think we covered enough. I keep it under 30 minutes is fine. I include everything in the description so you guys can look at more on your own. I'm here to give you a high level kind of overview of what I found in, you know, the week or the last 2 weeks, whatever. And then you guys go, you know, contact the people. If you're in those fields, go to the contact page, send them a message, apply if you can, hit them up on Twitter, and just start the conversation. Most of these people are, you know, proud to talk about themselves. They want to, share what they're doing. Just act enthusiastic, act interested, and you might get somewhere. You know, I'm doing that. So I want you guys to do it too. All right, guys, that is it. I will see you in the next episode, probably later this week. So until next time, take care and stay safe. All right, we'll see you.